Cricket is said to be a lot of things, but it isn't 100 on debut at the Boxing Day test. It's doing everything in your power to score 30 so you don't get dropped to fourth grade next week.
Cricket isn't a chanceless 100 at the SCG in front of friends, family, colleagues, lovers and ex-lovers. It's actually batting for 8 minutes in fading light against first graders with two-piece cricket balls off 18 yards on wet wickets with no sight screens a week after you found out you're red-green colourblind.
Cricket isn't taking a classic catch in the cordon and being hoisted off the field by your mates. It's going for a needlessly extravagant dive at long on to save a boundary off your terrible off-spinner, only to realise there's a syringe poking out of your arm because you're playing in a low socioeconomic suburb, 1 hour from home on their number two field, and you instantly think, oh no, I've definitely got AIDS, and you worry about how it's going to affect your quality of life, your relationship, and it's a really nervous three-month wait for the blood tests to come back.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Dave Edwards and Sam Perry. We are the Great Cricketer. Boys, welcome. I guess the first question is, what is this and how did we get here?
Look, here goes, I don't know, and thank you. It's great to be with all of you on the Great Cricketer Podcast. Look, we're not polished cricket commentators. We're not ex-test cricketers. We're just three blokes from the internet with a shared Twitter account, and somehow, for some reason, Fox Sports has given us a go. We're here to talk about cricket. Hopefully in a fun, jovial way, but there'll be a bit of darkness along the way. What are your thoughts, Pezza?
Well, yeah, thanks for the welcome. He goes as well. Great to be here. The first thing I wanted to say is, you know, thanks to Fox for having us. There are a lot of nerves from them, though, I think, in having us here. Like, just to paint the picture, we're in one of those one-way mirror rooms. They're all standing there with their arms folded, 100 pairs of eyes. Very,
clipboards.
Very worried about what we're saying. And we are here because we're trying to sort of reconcile our relationship with the game, aren't we? This is about therapy, so there will be some darkness, as you said, but there's also going to be some celebration. And you know, to those who have been, what would you say on the internet, trolling, who've been hating on us for taking on this sponsorship, any cricketer wants to be sponsored, you know, don't apologise for working with Fox on this. So so thank you.
Selling out. We're all selling out. Yeah. Sorry for giving you 4 years of free tweets. And now more content. Boys, speaking of content, books are out. It's book time. There are many books out. Johnson's got a book. Mitchell Johnson's got a book. Michael Clark. Has Michael Clark got a book out? I haven't been keeping up with the news.
I think so. I think there's a book out.
I think there's a book out. And also there's been some reaction to that. Brett Jeeves obviously wrote an article to some notoriety this week. Michael Clark book. Thoughts, boys?
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Mark Nicholas's book.
We're saving that to last, mate.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, hasn't this week of autobiographies just taught us that cricket, after everything, is really just about working out who's a good bloke? We're fascinated by it, aren't we? And like we often laugh at sort of members of the fairer sex for loving New Idea or Woman's Day or whatever, which is just kind of steeped in gossip, but we are no better. Are we? We absolutely love to find out who, you know, who's the worst bloke. That's what this week's been all about. Just who is the worst bloke and what side are you on?
Binary construct, yeah. Which side are you on? You know, Clark Kadich. It's basically like Christos Tsiolkos' book, The Slap, you know, where, you know, an incident happened at a backyard in suburban Melbourne. You know, boundaries were drawn. You know, people fell on either side. Whose side are you on, Kadich or Clark? We might get to that later. Mate, I reckon alpha power plays have just always been part of cricket. Now we're seeing them flow through in autobiographies, you know, ever since the days when W.G. Grace refused to walk when he got bowled. That's just how you behave in cricket. I mean, Clark's book, I haven't read it and won't, but it's some of the things that he's been saying, it's very attention-grabbing. And I was interested in the way that cricketers just don't respect you if you're a coach, if you didn't play at the top level. You know, said
anybody,
a lot of,
anybody.
Like, you have to have played at the absolute top level to gather the respect of a test cricket. It didn't always used to be like that. I think in the 90s and 2000s, there was John Buchanan, Gus Hiddink, you know, intelligent, thoughtful people. And in the US, you got, you know, Bill Belichick and Coach K in the NCAA. And, you know, it's a different mentality, I think, over in the US. But Australia, it's just alpha. You know, if you didn't play test cricket, who are you?
That's right. And that even goes beyond cricket. Like, I mean, just buying property or something like that. You refuse to deal with anyone who didn't play cricket at a high level, etc. I'm going to take an opposing view just for fun here on Clark. You know, please like me, Michael Clark. But also, if you're listening, I kind of like how he's just quite openly using his great, like, polarity that he creates as a personality to sell. Mm. Like, is his not going to be the book when aunties and mothers and wives, all well-meaning, and grandmothers, etc., anyone actually, just non-sports followers, scan at eye level for a book for their, you know, sports-loving male in their life.
And doesn't it jump off the shelves?
And say, Michael Clark, I know that name. Yeah, I'll get that book. Yeah. And someone was telling, just, sorry, someone was, I've interrupted him, but I'll continue. Someone was saying to me the other day that there was, I think, you know, speaking of US references, there was a sports book out that was sort of 600 pages long, and someone, like the publisher, went to page 400 on 10 of the books and put in a slip saying, call this number for $50.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
The number was never called.
Why didn't we do that?
It's only 200 pages, us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was probably the problem. I mean, like, well, something that I've taken away this week is that everyone hates each other in the Australian setup. And something that Michael Clark's book has brought up in my eyes is that he says that everyone's, not everyone, he says that a few people are great blokes. For instance, there's like a segment there with Darren Lehman, how he's saying, like, I respect Darren personally and professionally, but then goes on, like, and caveats it by saying, but it was ridiculous that I lost all of my power to him.
I noticed, I mean, you're talking about Australia there, but New Zealand, Brendan McCullum's also come out with a book, and he's slamming Ross Taylor, who is also still playing cricket. So a lot of this is happening, and there are guys still in the test team and at times coaches who are getting slammed by guys who are just out of the game. Like, it just, it's the only industry, isn't it, where this happens. Like, you don't leave your corporate job and, you know, rat on everyone in that industry because you want to get another job potentially one day. But these guys are out. Cricket's done. I can say whatever I want about these blokes.
Do you think when each of these players sit down with their publishers or their publicity people or what have you, and they plan out what are going to be the most kind of titillating aspects of the book that we're going to sort of push to get some interest in it? Mitchell Johnson was disappointed because his first foray into the public was just to say he dumped Shane Watson's head in the toilet.
If you ask me a serious question, can I just say yes?
Yeah. He's been forced to pivot on and to now talk about Clark and what happened in that change room as well.
Can we talk about, though, the ultimate act of alphadom that there's ever been, perhaps, and Jeeves wrote about it during the week, of him joining the South African tour and Michael Clark and Lara Bingle just walking past him, not even acknowledging him? I mean, that might be the greatest thing ever.
Easily the moment of this week, for sure, to read that. Because he described it, Brett described it so, like, with such great imagery. I think he said, like, even if I was in camouflage, they would have been able to see me. Literally standing there, and no one else was in distance. It was like being in the desert, I think he said. And just two people there, or three people there.
It's quite relatable, because, you know, whenever I go to Woolworths and I see a guy from my club walking past me, I obviously avoid eye contact at all costs.
You haven't looked at me once tonight.
I can't do it.
Turn around. It's I suppose, like, the people perceive the ultimate act of alphadom. People perceive the ultimate act of alphadom.
Academic Ian Higgins.
as being called champ. So if you get champed by anyone in your life, you are inferior to them immediately. You've always said that. It's a five-letter word that strikes the very vertebra of our society. But I think one level above of that is just not even acknowledging the existence of that human being. Mm. So, I mean, like, as Brett wrote in his article, Brett, my mate Brett.
That's right. BG.
BG. Yeah, he just wanted just a little tip of the cap. He just wanted to say, you know, well done on making it to the elite level. Even if you are just filling in, that's fine. But just not even looking.
You have worked your whole life and made your friends and family proud, and external community, school community, etc. You're on this tour, you're wearing Australian kit, you're opposite me, I'm the captain. I'm not acknowledging you at any stage.
I mean, does this happen in other sports, or is it just cricket? Are cricketers just weird blokes? I mean, you spend so much time with these guys, you could strike up some kind of relationship or camaraderie, but, you know, it seems like it only brings you to loggerheads, spending the more time you spend with your teammates.
It's the angst, isn't it? It's a long drive with someone who you don't really know. It's like when you pick up a hitchhiker and you drive for 4 hours. It's the same as that. It's just too long. If it's 15 minutes down the road, like a
and you've got match, all the information you need in the first 30 minutes. there's nothing else to talk about.
The main topic of conversation, I think, in the next couple of days, barring a new revelation from Clark or Mitchell Johnson or Mark Nicholas about who's a is the selection of the Australian side. So this is kind of the one that has the most fanfare. As we record this, it's on a Wednesday night we're recording this, so we don't know who the test side is. Right. And I think that's kind of the point. No one really knows what the test side's going to be. We have to face facts. You know, this selection, like this actual selection this summer, comes with the most fanfare. I've always said this, you know, if the announcement of national contracts is like the federal budget.
We said that twice today. I don't know why.
You know, with the federal budget, you know, we're investing, you know, we're cutting, where promises are broken, etc. Then the announcement of this side, you know, for the first test is like club selection night. What do we make of the test side being announced and, you know, the questions within?
So the announcement's in 2 days' time from now. So we're looking at a Friday announcement.
So it'll be like an 11 a.m. press conference, I imagine, heavily orchestrated, strong media attention. Very different to the grade setup, obviously. Tuesday night, maybe sausages or $5 beers,
which I think is a lot of nervous tension. I think it's disappointing. I mean, Australian cricket would do well to create just a selection night, and they could televise it. Mm. You know, kind of like the Alan Border Medal, but just for selections. You know, have it at Crown Casino. The barbecue could just be a really great grill from, you know, whoever the resident kind of chef is there.
Julian Zemiro could MC.
Exactly. So it would have to be all. Yeah.
That's right. First name that popped in.
You know, and you'd have the tables of incumbents. Mm. Yeah, so you'd have who'd you have? Like Hazelwood, Warner, Smith, Lyon would be at the table as well.
Who's at the head of the table?
I suppose Lehman. I guess he's there. Lyon's at the table. He's feeling. You know, the guys feel like he shouldn't really be there. They've never felt comfortable, but he's there because he's an incumbent.
I like the idea though of like a national selection where, there's a layer to it. So there's always like if your name, like they obviously do fifth grade through to first grade, and so you're really hoping that your name's not called at the beginning, rather towards the end. But you know in your heart of hearts that you're getting called in fifth grade as a reserve, in case you know four people pull out and it's raining. But so I like the idea like of everyone standing up at this meeting. So like Crown Casino, there are no tables, there are no seats. People standing up, lots of arms folded, like at kind of the end of a test series, and they do the press conferences and stuff. And there's lots of like, when names are being called, that kind of stuff. I want people mic'd up. That sort of reaction is what I want.
I thought you were going to say everyone standing up and you just sit down when your name is called just to leave like the last 11. We're still feeling really excited as it goes. But we want to talk about sort of what counts in cricket. I mean, what does help you be selected in cricket? I mean, we've had the sort of CACSI staff, Australia A's played, Matador Cup's been on, Sheffield Shield's on now. Mm. There have been international ODIs. I forget what happened over in South Africa already. You know, how do we judge what counts and what doesn't?
Well, personally, you know, whatever counted for me was only when I was playing at home. I was always really bad playing away from home. And I think, the success that we've had away from home recently has been quite limited. And I think that's because blokes don't know how to play away. You know, they're much more comfortable at home because your girlfriend might be coming, your mum and dad will be there, your friends are going to be there, and you're going to perform better.
It's not because the wickets are
flat.
And mum can't come.
Yeah, it's because mum's not there. Where's mum?
And that's before we get on to dad as well. I like this idea that, you know, runs or wickets carry a certain weighting. And I took with interest today that the BCE and the HSE kind of started. So it got me thinking about weighting of things, you know, when you did like sort of general maths or something, you thought you could get a good mark, but actually it meant nothing against the good subjects. And it's kind of like getting 70 in the third grade trial. It's actually worth about 35 or something when it comes to selection time.
My thoughts are when it comes to the club arena, that those teams are picked. They're already picked. Like you can do whatever you want in pre-season. You can go to your beach runs. You can do your shuttle runs. You can get to every pre-season fitness. You can hit those balls cleanly in the throw-down net. You can smash a fifth grader for 150 meter six, high five 10 blokes on the way out. Yeah. You're still getting picked in reserve grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way you're getting picked in the top grade because the team's already picked.
Especially if you're a new player and you're coming to a new club and you go to all the pre-seasons, you know, you go to beach runs, shuttle runs, you're doing everything you can. You know, you're going out with guys, having coffees when you don't need to. And, you know, you still hit 88 not out in a 2v3s trials game and don't get any of the five grades. That's actually what happened to me.
That happened to you, didn't it?
Yeah. And I'm still reeling from it.
You've obviously moved on from it. And it hasn't affected you.
No. I just had to write about it in a book.
This round of Sheffield Shield fixtures, lads, people are being told to bowl 15 overs and then they're being pulled out halfway through the match. Like, it's just, everything is just pointed towards a test team. So they're even like, not fixing, but they're fixing Sheffield Shield matches just so blokes get a run out. That team's picked, isn't it? Those teams are picked.
Did that actually happen? They fixed a run out.
Fixed a strong allegation, mate. You better have some evidence for that.
I like how you said it's not fixing, but they're fixing. It's the same word.
Oh, look, I haven't changed my point of view on the matter. I said what I said a few years ago, and I guess at the moment he's obviously trying to sell a book, so it's amazing how more and more of the story comes out.
So are you two mates?
I think that's a bit of a stretch to say that we're mates.
Well, that's certainly what he's been saying.
Yeah, look, I think, as I said before, it's a bit of a stretch of the imagination, given that we've hardly spoken about since it all happened, and obviously haven't played since, you know, he took over as captain. But anyway, that's all old news now. So, as I said, I think it's more about him trying to promote his book through the summer.
Look, boys, as you know, we've been racking our brains for weeks about the ideal guest to have on the first show, and then a few days ago we made an overly casual approach on Twitter to a legend of the game, and received a phone call back from him while I was in the shower. I rushed out, you know, desperate for conversation with anybody, and I heard a voice at the other end, and it said, "Sam, Mervyn Hughes." And so, you know, it's with unbelievable pleasure we welcome to the show a man who, you know, and I read this the other day, he needs no surname. There's the Don, there's Viv, then there's Merv. How are you, mate?
Sam, how are you? Hello, gentlemen, how are we?
G'day, mate. In terms of your career highlights, and there have been many, where does dialing into this podcast with three blokes you've ever met rate?
In career highlights, I would say it's the most recent.
Very good.
I'll take that as well.
No, mate. Just enjoy the work on Twitter, so happy to come along for the ride.
Well, it's kind of you to say, Merv, and I suppose if I could kind of like understand why you might enjoy the work is because you obviously have some relationship to grade cricket. I think they call it premier cricket now or whatever. You're a, you know, a stalwart vice president, bowling coach. Have I read that? Have I got my research right there at Footscray Edgewater?
Yeah, you've got that right, Footscray Edgewater. So I played all my club cricket at Footscray at a senior level. And now my oldest boy's down there, and yeah, I'm vice president and bowling coach, and that probably would... answer for the spiral in our bowling stocks for the last couple of years. We've just gone downhill since I came on board.
How did you get onto the vice presidency there? I mean, you know, I don't know how the pre-selection works down there at Footscray, but...
Yeah. No, I think it's like any other club. I was on the committee and I missed a meeting. I'm vice president, so I'm too scared to miss another meeting.
That's really good, Merv. I mean, I think it's great to hear of someone who has just been such a storied and legendary cricketer for the country to be genuinely involved at that level, not to kind of give it some nice rhetoric every so often, or you know, or turn up at an event and say it's really important. You're actually involved kind of week to week. You know, do you think there are enough players at the top level, past and present, who are involved in grade cricket, or do there need to be more?
I think it's an individual thing, isn't it? I spent all my time at the one club, so I was very easily convinced by some mates on the committee to get back involved. And also, as I said, my son's playing down there, so I'm around the club most of the time. So if I can help out, that's great. But I think once there's a reason you leave grade cricket, isn't there? There's family, there's a move away, whatever. You often go to another club, and if you do go to another club, there's a bit of animosity with the club that you leave. So you're not really that welcome back, to be honest. But when you spend your time at the one club, your son's there, all your mates are there, it's a pretty easy decision to make.
Merv, as Sam was saying before, it's fantastic that you have stayed in the game, particularly at the club level. Have you noticed quite a big change from, say, when you, I mean, your last test match was 1994, I think I'm right in saying. has there been a lot of change in the culture of the dressing room, for instance, or is it more or less the same jovial kind of convivial atmosphere?
Yeah, I think there's one screaming change, and that's the lack of alcohol consumed. and that, I suppose that comes back to road rules and that. We've got a lot of young players at the club, so if they're on P plates, they've got to be zero when they leave the rooms. And when I played, it was a lot of senior players. 0.05 was virtually just coming in. You're worried about, you're a little bit worried about that, but prepared to run the gauntlet at times.
It's nothing if not honest. But and Merv, I understand that you played a game last year for Footscray Edgewater. I was wondering if you could just run us through what that experience was like. What happened? What was the reason?
Yeah, you know, I like your work, boys. When you're saying you getting sleeves by a old fat 50-year-old, that's how the North gets. Force players felt. I reckon this is old fat bloke in the field just giving it to him, and they were just laughing at me. But it wasn't people sort of phrased it a comeback. It was nowhere near a comeback. It was a fill-in. So it was the last weekend before Christmas last year. In the second week of a game, three of our senior boys were called into the Victorian game to play the West Indies down at Geelong. So three second 11 players had to go up, three third 11 players into the second 11, and obviously three fourth 11 players into the third 11, and they were scratching for numbers, and they just asked if I'd play. My son was playing in the fourth, my other son was playing under 16, so I just said it would be a great opportunity to play along with two boys. So got the young fellow involved, 15-year-old, and went down and played a day, and people say, what sort of day was it? It's probably the worst day of my life. seriously, it was 47 degrees. Most of the crew got called off because it was too hot. And here's this old fat fella sitting in the... Well, we had 298 on the board. We had them one for 20 after not too many overs, and they beat us about seven down. So it wasn't a great day all round.
It's the most great cricket story I've ever heard. We'll just get someone's dad along. He hasn't played Test cricket for Australia. Yeah. We'll just get someone's dad along.
It was the toughest day of cricket I've ever played, I'll tell you.
So, Merv, is that the first time you played alongside your two boys? Which of your kids is better at cricket? Am I wrong in asking that?
Which one's my favourite?
Who do you love more?
No, they're both at different stages of their careers. One's 19, the other one's 15, and just sort of coming through to the under-16s. Mate, the thing that I love about it is they both enjoy themselves. They both have a bat, they both have a bowl, they double in a little bit of wicket-keeping, so they do it all. But they're just enjoying themselves, so I don't want to really put too much pressure on them. I did put pressure on the fourth 11 captain last year, though, to get my youngest bloke a bowl. Yeah. And he came on and bowled last. I was sort of hoping that he'd get a wicket, but unfortunately he didn't. Mate, that's the way it goes. But seriously, it was a good day. Actually, it was a great day. To be where I am and played a lot of cricket around the place. It was probably one of the best days of cricket I've played, just on the park with my two boys.
Oh, that's really good, Merv. And I guess another question I want to ask you. We had to ask you. There's just been a spate of autobiographies coming out this week. Every man and his dog who's played at the international level is releasing a book, it would seem. And one of the major talking points with all of them, really, is just who's a good bloke and who's a terrible bloke in the dressing room. You've had a best-selling autobiography yourself. I mean, do you have any advice to those people who are coming out with autobiographies as to how you're meant to sell them?
Yeah, what happens in the change room stays in the change room. Anyone who plays cricket, you know that you're going to play with guys that you don't particularly like. You don't particularly socialise with. You don't like their sense of humour. You don't like the way they dress. There's a multitude of things wrong with them. But when you play cricket, you're on the park, you're teammates, and you cope with each other. So, you've got to read everything in context, because what happens is a lot of the press just takes a certain paragraph out of context. It sounds dreadful, but if you read it in the light that it's been written, it sort of mellows it down a bit. So before I comment on any of those, I'd love to read the books. Who am I kidding. I just get the books for the pictures. Just just out of the juicy bits. But you read a paragraph before and a paragraph after, and it normally explains itself rather than just the highlight of the criticism of someone.
Yeah, context is crucial.
Isn't it?
I think that's why a lot of people give up the game, because they realise that they're spending their Saturday afternoons with 10 other blokes they hate, and you know, there's 4 blokes in the opposition who laugh when you get out, and that just wears it takes its toll after a while. But do you think that all this sort of stuff is heightened because they're playing so much cricket at the moment? They play all forms. They're playing every day of the week. They're playing 10 months of the year. They're away from home. Is this all sort of built up to maybe what it wasn't in the late 80s, mid 90s?
It's a good question, because if you're playing cricket with blokes you don't particularly like, and you're spending more and more time with them, it becomes harder and harder. Now, there was a thing in the Ashes a couple of years ago where Australia were over there, and they said that Watson and Clark were at each other, and I was speaking to the support staff, know the physiotherapist and the security bloke really well, and they're saying, mate, there's no problems within the team. It's just the media, because we're going badly, just looking for something, and they're constantly asking about it. But within the team, there's not a problem. So I think we've got to take into context too is that there's plenty of media now, and they always look for an excuse why the team's not going well, if it's not going well, and then they hone in. And once one gets out, everyone else thinks, well, where there's smoke, there's fire. We'll jump on board with this. Mm. But ultimately, If you're touring with the team and you're away together for 3 weeks, for 3 months, whatever it is, if you're not getting on well with someone on the ground, or you don't really like, you don't socialise with them. There's that many pockets and groups of players. You go down to the bar after those players, say, right, what are we doing for tea? If one of the blokes not getting on, I'm going to go for a curry, or I'm going for Chinese. So you don't spend time together. So that's a good way to deal with it. But yeah, listen, they are playing more and more cricket, and probably comes to the resting and rotation of players. And a lot of people don't understand that the players are the biggest assets that Cricket Australia have. So they want the best players ready for the biggest games. So that means they have to rest players from one day, or from even test matches, towards the end of a series. So be it. I think it's important that people understand that, but also what they've got to do is take on board that people go to the cricket to watch certain players. Now, if I go to the MCG and I'm pretty keen to watch Mitch Stark fire up in a one-day game, you get there the morning of the game, he's not playing, you're a bit disappointed. So if they're going to rest players, they know that a couple of days out, release the team the day before so people aren't going expecting to see that player play that's been rested.
We'll just go back quickly to the player relationships, if that's all right. I mean, I noticed in your book that in the 80s and 90s, players used to room with each other on tours a lot, and I guess that gives you a lot of insight into each other's personalities, maybe brings you closer together, or maybe perhaps reveals some strange idiosyncrasies that are better left kept secret. But look, I'm just wondering, your experiences rooming with blokes, was that a good way to get to know them? And as a second point to that, who's the strangest human being that you ever roomed with on tour?
Yeah, listen, what happens in the room stays in the room.
I thought that was the dressing room.
Dressing rooms and just rooms.
Just rooms. Yeah, room.
But having said that, Tim May. I don't want to mention any names, but Tim May was a shocker. And basically, I reckon it was 89, we got over there and we roomed with guys in the first test match. And Alan Border's very superstitious. So when we won the first test match, you had that bloke as roomie for the rest of the tour. I roomed with Tim May and he was an absolute nightmare. He wasn't playing, I was playing. I was getting to bed early. He was coming home late, all lights on, with a few beers under his belt. And he had his anti-snoring shirt, okay?
Right.
He wore this yellow T-shirt, he didn't snore. And half the time he came home, he couldn't find it. So you'd be sitting there thinking, mate, put your shirt on. I'm sure some people say I was the worst roomie that they've ever roomed with, and I couldn't disagree with that. But for mine, Tim, mate, terrible.
Good.
Merv, something that you were known for in your career, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but obviously your engagement with the crowd brought, I mean, it was part of cricket really in the early 90s and sort of until the late 80s as well. I mean, engagement with the crowd was fantastic, and it really brought this sort of energy and attraction to the game that we probably haven't seen it in maybe since. But I do want to know, what is the strangest thing that anyone's ever yelled out to you when you're feeling down a fine leg?
Yeah, good call. You get a lot of things yelled at you.
I'm sure you do.
The strangest was in New Zealand, fielding in front of the terrace at Auckland. Mm-hmm. That was infamous. I suppose that's New Zealand's answer to Bay 13. Yep. And what they were yelling out, I didn't understand them. I had no clue what they were saying, so he just turned around and waved. It was in some sort of language that was close to Australian or English. But I couldn't understand it.
Well, Merv, we're just going to move on to a different part of this interview. It's a little segment we're sort of loosely calling throwdowns. So you understand what throwdowns are. You
know, in cricket, I can hit throwdowns.
Everything's about getting to 10. You know, you've got to take 10 catches, you get maybe 10 throwdowns. Yep. And so the idea is we're just going to kind of go around the group and ask questions of you, and we're going to ask that you answer them in 1 to 2 words, if that's okay.
How many syllables in each word?
No restrictions, mate. You can say the longest word in the world.
And can you use hyphenated words?
Yes. No. No.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Yeah,
well, no hyphenated words. Yeah.
Only rule. Only rule of throwdowns.
So we'll start with an easier one. Okay, so let's go. Merv, what's it like to play on a ground named after you?
Oh, amazing.
Do you get out of covers duty on those games?
I should.
2 words. Careful.
Well, that was 2 words. That was all right, wasn't it?
That's all right. Sorry, Merv.
You said 2 words? This is hard.
Merv, it's well known in club cricket that you look the teammate that you're secretly in love with directly in the eyes while singing the team song. What colour are Alan Border's eyes?
Brown.
Merv, how important was your role as Australian opening bowler for 10 years in preparing you for the role of Ivan Milat in the cult show Fat Pizza?
Very.
Merv, you were on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here and participated in an eating contest with Maureen McCormack, who played Marsha Brady on the Brady Bunch. How did you get inside her head?
Easily.
On the flight over to England for the 1989 Ashes tour, infamously, David Boone allegedly drank 52 beers during the flight. Is it true, Merv, that you drank 27 beers before Singapore before switching to rum and cokes on that same flight?
Didn't drink.
Is it contracted?
Me, David Boone, 53.
53?
53.
Yes.
It's going up.
Merv, do you still get kit from County? Do you have any kit that you don't want, and can I have it?
No. To both questions.
Merv, as one of the early cricketing exponents of the handlebar moustache, what do you think when you see modern cricketers like Mitchell Johnson, who definitely wax their bodies when they have ironic facial hair? How does that make you feel?
Yeah. Not really a word to describe that, is there?
No. I think there's a German word for it.
Yeah. Schittenheisen.
That's the one.
Well, in the second test against the West Indies at the Wacker in 1988, you took match figures of 13 for 217, including taking 8 for 87 in the second innings, and also famously took a hat-trick. But Australia lost by 169 runs. How hard was it to act disappointed?
I need more than 1 word, 2 words to answer this.
Take as many as you need, mate.
Yeah, okay, that's one you can expand on.
Oh, mate, yes. You just get man of the match. You walk into the room, you've got the little trinkets, 4 trinkets there, man of the match. You're looking around to the other 10 players in the team that have got their heads down and thinking to yourself, if you blokes had done your bit, we would have done a chance for that. I understand where you blokes come from. But I really do.
We've got the number one grade cricketer of all time with us, Merv Hughes, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure from all of us. Thank you for kicking off the first episode of the Grade Cricketer podcast and your champion. And hopefully we can have you on again.
Oh, I hope so. Guys, you do great work. Keep it up. Put a lot of smiles on a lot of cricketers' faces.
It has been referred to as the best sports writing tribute to a particular sport since Fever Pitch.
Does it do anything to enhance literature? Would be another question.
I wouldn't even call it literature, really.
So, lads, earlier in the week, we put out the call on social media, on our various social media platforms.
Risky move.
Just questions. Ask TGC. Ask the great cricketer. Any grey cricket-related questions, any life questions that you might have, we'll try and answer a couple of them every week. And we've got a couple here. And I might kick off the first one, guys. Let me just go through my notes.
I think we've got to be snappy here too. Fox are sort of winding us up here, which may not be a good sign.
Here we go. I've got one from Damien Sherry. He's said, question for the podcast. Who in a club is more alpha, the solid state player or the fringe T20 franchise player? Pez, are you?
Okay, thanks. I had to think deeply about this one. I think T20's revolutionised cricket, no more so in the social sphere. So, you know, what does it mean to be alpha? State cricket, linked with history and prestige, you know, a lineage connected into the folklore of 90s, 80s, 70s, back to the mysterious, you know, Bradman circuit, the 20s to the 40s. T20 cricket, on the other hand, definitively alpha in the pursuit of raw aggression, dominance, partying. You know, so we're going to have to start thinking, you know, talking about old money alpha and new money alpha as well. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I reckon at the moment it's probably the state cricketer is just fractionally more alpha, but in 2 years, you know, with all of the pipes and the chests and the and whatnot,
the pipes and the chests.
You know, the T20 franchise player could be a bit more of a commodity.
Well, my opinion is that the T20 guy is more alpha on the surface, but there's a palpable sense of insecurity that surrounds everything that he does. Look, his entire self-worth hinges on staying on the fringes of this T20 squad. He just needs to have a headshot in his T20 kit on the club website to feel something, preferably a short bio, maybe a little Q&A section, you know, top three dinner guests, who would they be? You know, Nelson Mandela, Michael Jordan, and Eric Clapton. That kind of thing. So I think he's got that kind of that alpha power play over the humble state cricketer who's a servant of the game of cricket.
My answer would be that the person in the club who's always the most alpha is the bloke who's got a job.
Yep. So no one at our club.
Stephen Cooper at Official S. Cooper writes, acceptable amount for a fourth grader who bats seven to spend on a new stick?
I think this is very much an engagement ring type situation for your lower grader. So you're looking at sort of 3 months salary. So for Stephen Cooper here, we're looking at sort of $300-$400.
Name cannot be blank, says, that's the actual name. I've never recovered from being sledged from outside boundary by my teammates when I was batting in under 13s. Any advice?
Seek professional help.
Psychiatrist, yeah.
Psychiatrist.
Happy for me to keep rolling with the questions.
Yeah,
here.
Please keep
Ed
going.
Lawrence says, please tell me why I've given so many Saturdays to a game that I'm just not very good at.
Well, because it's all you've ever known and you have a deep-seated fear of change.
Manu Shark says, why do I take leg stump if I can't play the cut shot to save my life?
This one's fairly obvious, boys. This is very much a situation where his dad was obviously the square leg umpire one game and he wanted to be closer to him.
Geographically closer to him, yeah.
Geographically.
Yeah, not emotionally close to him, yeah.
F-Bomb asks, where would Donald Trump bat in the order?
I think Donald Trump bats eight, doesn't bowl. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you could open with him, but, you know, I wouldn't expect too much. A few fireworks early. More interested in where he's going to field. You know, I would honestly have him at bat pad just barking insanity at the batsman all day.
Doesn't need big hands for that too.
No, really. You can have usually the smallest hands are at bat pad.
Yeah. Galpo says, what's the sledge that hurt you the most? I played in a match once against former Australian cricketer Phil Jakes, who'd previously hit in the previous week hit 320 in the match. I walked out to bat, and until that point, I hadn't realised that this affect I had where I tucked my socks into my pants.
I always noticed that and wondered why you did that.
Village.
Never said anything.
Village.
Never said anything.
I wish you had, because I walked out to bat, and Phil Jakes was standing at first slip, and he said, where the F am I, is this under 12s? And then Rod Tucker, who was the umpire, started laughing at that as well. Oh. And I was later caught
it's never
a backward
good when
point.
The umpire's laughing at it.
The bowling of Joel Tushy just before lunch.
I think the sledge that hurt me the most was when my dad said to me, Ian, I'm really disappointed in you.
Yeah. That was at graduation day, wasn't it?
Gary Nielsen asks, as a fourth grade captain, I'm not sure if I'm directing enough abuse/sexually inappropriate and negative comments towards the juniors getting their footing in grade. This is terrible.
Yeah. We need to vet some of these.
How can I be sure I have the mix right? Just, you'll be in court soon. Toby Cooper says, do you have any tips on engaging in cricket banter with my workmates? They all play seconds in the Geelong Cricket Association. I only play village cricket back in the old dart, and so I feel a bit intimidated. Any cricket banter, boys?
Talk about reverse swing. No one knows anything about reverse swing, particularly in Australia. Just make some stuff up, and then people go, oh, this bloke knows what he's talking about. Reverse swing's your key.
Duke's balls. Matthew Cooper, no relation, says, what's your opinion on fine systems? Not just the old $2 dropped catch, but also for bowling wides and no balls. Too harsh or not harsh enough?
Mate, look, it's a special type of sociopath that relishes in the fine system, I think. And there's always at least one bloke who's just all over it. He's just got an internal spreadsheet in his mind. He's going, yep, drop catch, fine. You know, 5 minutes late, fine. He's adding them up. Avoid these blokes at all costs. Not become these blokes for the young cricketers out there.
Well said. Tim Boyce asks, what is the correct protocol if the My Cricket input person rips you off a few runs or direct hit run out? A kindly worded email reminder or outright social media humiliation? Outright's a good word there.
Look, I mean, my suggestion would be just to politely contact the person in charge and maybe ask them to back pay those runs that you missed out on onto the next innings. These guys who control the My Cricket stats have so much power, and you just don't want to get them offside.
They are the gatekeepers.
They're the gatekeepers to your livelihood.
He goes, you said something to me about this the other day. We believe there's a gap in the market to actually hack into My Cricket and start adjusting the numbers within them.
I think there's a market there, boys. I think there's a real niche market there. I think we can set up some sort of system. Any IT gurus out there who hack into... I mean,
Assange, you know, don't worry about WikiLeaks.
Don't worry about WikiLeaks.
Hey, this is where the dollar is. Imagine
how
that.
How much would people actually pay to hack into their My Cricket stats? Because it would make a lot more resumes out there accurate. You know?
Luke Meredith asks, after wearing a suit before changing to net training to assert that I'm clearly more successful than the other guys, how long do I need to keep that up for? Am I stuck wearing my best threads each Wednesday arvo? And then how often do I need to rotate suits? I've only got two and the third session is next week.
I don't know what kind of club you're playing for, mate, but I've always been Tuesdays and Thursdays net sessions.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing with one session a week on a Wednesday. You must be village.
Can't really dignify the question.
Yuck. Everything's yuck about that. Yuck.
Okay. Final question. Chris Lloyd asks, or he says, sorry. I recently returned from a season in the UK. My family think I have a shot of playing for Australia. Should I let them know that my home ground over there had a tree at square leg? Or should I play along and hope for a miracle?
Don't ever reveal that. No. Keep that one close to your chest, mate.
Well, that's all we've got time for on episode one of The Grade Cricketer. We hope you've enjoyed it. We're definitely getting the wrap-up from Fox Sports here at the moment to get out of this room. Big thanks to Murph Hughes as well for joining the show. You can like or subscribe to this on iTunes or whatever. All those social media things will be there. And we'll catch you next week. Any final words, boys?
Work hard.
Let's get back to the clubhouse for a few beers.